some time, but there are no records, there are nothing. So the czars, see, you have to sign a declaration that you were 18. There were those that wanted, there were those who officially never reached their 18th birthday because they never went to the army. So they were signed one affidavit, you know, that they're 12, and the other affidavit is that he's 20 because he's getting married. So for that, you also have to have a different name. And they would, in certain kahilas, the reason I'm mentioning all of this is because you have to understand the attitude of the Jews towards the government. Once you begin to understand the attitude of the Eastern European Jew towards the government, it does not condone felonious acts which are done in this country, because it's a different government completely. But it's hard to get that out of you. It's hard to make the government your friend after, or at least a matter of respect after a century of cheating them, because that was the only way you could survive. There were certain Jewish communities, I heard it from my Rebbe when I was in the Gemara, when we got him off the subject of teaching Gemara, and we used to get him to tell us stories about Europe. So he said that in their town they would copy every name from the tombstones. Right? And then when the Russian government came to see somebody, they said he's dead, and they take him out to the cemetery and he was dead, right? There he was. There was the tombstone. He wasn't there. He said there was nobody was alive in their town. No one. And he said that there was the town next door had tombstones without graves. So that when the government came, you know, they take him out on the cemetery and they say, you know, this guy that didn't pay his taxes, you know, there he is, right? You want him, take him. Now, that attitude, right, that attitude and that type of behavior, and that was the only way they could survive. I mean, you're talking here about laws that were meant to destroy the Jewish people, that were immoral from the onset. And because of that, therefore, they had really no choice in the matter. But again, I want to point out to you, it raises a certain climate. It builds in a certain attitude. And that attitude has not been dissipated simply because of the fact that the Western democracies today attempt to have a normal type of government. Now, in 1840, the Tsar exiled to Siberia about 10,000 Jews, whom he felt to be hardcore incorrigibles. But for a certain unknown reason, he changed his mind in the middle and all 10,000 were brought back. But quite a few of them naturally died on the road. He did not send them to Siberia on the first class airline. They had to walk to Siberia, which is not something that everybody could do. In 1840, in one of the most remarkable documents that Nicholas produced, he said exactly, it's the Mein Kampf of the Romanovs, said exactly what he meant. He said the reason that the Jews cannot be assimilated in Russian society and are not entitled to any of the Russian privileges is because of their terrible religion. I want you to remember this, because this anti-Semitism is still religious anti-Semitism. At the end of the 19th century, we'll meet even a more insidious form of anti-Semitism, which is not religious, it is racial anti-Semitism, which it has nothing to do with what the Jews believe, and it just has to do with the genetic fact that he is Jewish. I mentioned to you before Lord Rothschild's famous statement when he was refused seating in the House of Commons in Parliament because he would not take the Christian oath, and so he said it is not